You are listening to CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Mercurio. I'm a principal with Offutt Kerman. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Matt Stover. Thanks, Matt, for joining.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm here to talk about, or talk with him, a little bit about some of his entrepreneurial initiatives, and in particular, his relatively new initiative, Players Philanthropy Fund. Matt, thanks for joining.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So, you have a very storied background. You obviously have a very successful football career, including two Super Bowls. Ravens, Ring of Honor inductee. How did you come up with the idea for your new fund?
The Players Philanthropy Fund was an awesome opportunity for me to help other athletes, CEOs, or even business people out there in the world to be able to set up a platform to gift their money well and to allow the responsibility and their branding to be in partnership with me. I figured it out back in 2006 when I had a major sale in a company, utilized a donor advised fund platform, was able to gift very simply through it and very seamlessly. And I figured that most athletes and most high profile individuals should also have the same flexibility and that ability to do that.
So is it fair to say that you're providing the back office and the support for the athletes' charitable endeavors?
Absolutely. Instead of them having their own private 501c3, the athlete or the high-profile individual will come in and they will set up an account. The account will be a nonprofit corporation, and in return, that nonprofit corporation will have its brand, whether it's the Ed Reed Foundation or the Matt Stover Foundation or the Ray of Hope Foundation, whatever the branding you would like it to be, then they are able to actually operate as if they had their own 501c3. But we do all the back office, all the compliance work, all the issues with the tax returns, making sure that the checks are vetted and that the accounts are balanced and all the work that they shouldn't be doing, because believe it or not, running a private 501c3 is a business. Yeah. And they want to do philanthropic work, but they find themselves actually in trouble just a couple of years down the road because they haven't been compliant.
So your clients get the oomph of having their own charity without all the nonsense behind the scenes.
That's it. Let them focus on the work that they love to do, which is actually utilizing their platform to go out and raise the funds if necessary, or to utilize their platform to promote their cause and to gift to that cause, but not have to convolute it with not running it well like any business.
Yeah, I get to spend more time on what they really are trying to intend to accomplish, right?
And that's what most
filing tax returns, right?
I mean, it's crazy. Or that you have to pay somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
We are doing this on a daily basis for many, many of funds.
So you have, I understand, you have a mix of celebrities and, of course, athletes. Do you care to comment on some of the endeavors?
Well, absolutely. Some of the guys that, and gals that we have done tremendous work in their communities. We have Ed Reed, the Ray of Hope. Those two are right there. They're in our communities. Ed Reed, what he's doing is he's building fields in these communities, one right now in New Orleans. And we're able to partner with him in not only fundraising, but also helping him pay for those expenses that go into building that field. Where most donor advised funds can not do that, we have a model called a fiscal sponsorship model, which allows them to run their funds through the Players Philanthropy Fund and to host events, and that we can actually come along and pay for invoice inside of it. Whether it's for somebody who's running the field soil testing or the turf field that they're going to be hiring or the consultant that they have to deal with, we come alongside of them and make sure that all of that is compliant.
How does your initiative tie in with your own personal charity, the Matt Stover charity, right?
Well, yeah, the Matt Stover Foundation, which I have an account at the Players Philanthropy Fund. What we were able to do with that is I knew that I wanted some flexibility. And what we do at the Players Philanthropy Fund, which is mostly differentiated from others, is that we have flexibility. It doesn't, the funds that come into the Players Philanthropy Fund are considered all tax deductible donations, and that those funds can not only be given to another 501c3, but also we have a private operating foundation drop down model that those funds can be dropped down and then can go to a hardship case, such as somebody who needs an electrical bill paid, a car payment, a rent payment, whatever that would be, and then also for a scholarship perspective. So if you wanted to give to directly to an individual for their tuition at a school, we have the ability to do that, where a donor advised fund can only give to another 501c3.
Seems like a lot of athletes have a desire to start a fund. Does the NFL encourage funds?
They do and they don't. Huh. They know that running a 501c3 can be very difficult, mm-hmm. and that most athletes should not do that unless they have the capabilities of raising seven figures a year. Because then at that point, you have your own staff. Mm. If you're below the seven figure, maybe even a half million, you should absolutely partner with somebody such as myself to allow them to do the back office, and so therefore you can go out and help raise those funds. We had a particular athlete came into the fund this past year because he wanted to run and build homes in Detroit and in the neighborhoods that he grew up in. Here's the issue. If he's building homes, he's becoming a general contractor. And there are already other people in the community of Detroit that do this work already. So what we convinced him of, set up an account, raise funds through your account, and then gift it to the individual nonprofit that is already doing that work, so he doesn't find himself upside down quickly.
Yeah, it seems like there's perhaps maybe different degrees of charitable funds, or at least vehicles that athletes should think about. Not everybody should have their own foundation. I think athletes and celebrities think
very few people should have their own foundation.
Right. So would you provide a platform that gives everyone the opportunity to have a foundation or
very simply we can set up an account in less than really 24 hours. We allow them to go out and do crowdfunding, because we can set up a PayPal account. We can set up things for them with regard to raffles, as long as the rules are compliant with the IRS.
Yeah.
And we understand those rules.
You know, what you said is really powerful. You said you can set up an account in 24 hours. So when there's a disaster like Puerto Rico or some other event that happens, you give somebody the ability to make an impact immediately, as opposed to going through
the whole year, or giving through another organization, which may be heavily fee-based compared to what we're charging. So instead of a double-digit type of fee, we're in the single digit, and we're able to absolutely streamline that gifting, in fact, internationally. So if it's an international cause that they want to be able to support, we have the ability, as long, look, we will do the vetting to make sure that those dollars are being given properly.
Well, in the end, I think people set up charities, I think, to make an impact.
You would hope.
Want to make an impact as quickly as you can, especially if there's a disaster.
Well, what you don't want to happen also is, let's say an athlete goes out and raises $100,000. And he's got some relatives running the organization for him. And only 20% of the funds are being gifted through the cause. And then the other 80% goes to the operating expenses of the business or the nonprofit. You do not want that to happen. So what we do is we come alongside and make sure that doesn't happen, because we won't do that. We will not allow it. And then also, if you're a corporation that is sponsoring an athlete, you know that your dollars are being gifted properly.
Well, we all know credibility in the charitable world is paramount, right?
Very much.
If I think that it's going in line in someone else's pocket, I'm not so apt to donate my hard work. So that's great. That's a good point. So I understand you recently hosted an event in Baltimore, a cornhole tournament over at the Museum of Industry. What was the purpose of the event? What did you hope to achieve?
To have a lot of fun.
Okay, fun. That's a good purpose.
To create some bandwidth. And to also, we gave over $8,000 to athletes that were there and helping us with the cause. We wanted to help raise funds for them, and then also for our own operating expenses, because we're only charging 5% on deposits. And why is that not enough? Because you have to have a lot of money running through there in order to make up for the operating expenses. And so what we wanted to do is offset some of our expenses, gift to the causes that are there already in the room with the athletes, and also to make sure that people know more about the Players Philanthropy Fund and what we're doing in our communities around the country.
Got it. So do you have another event you're
next year, we're going to already do the
cornhole event again? It's an annual event.
Here's the neat thing about the Players Philanthropy Fund. Inside of the fund, we can also assist our account holders in whatever community they are in. And so our next initiative is to partner with those and to set up small venue type of events so that they can actually raise funds for them, create a larger bandwidth within partnership with the Players Philanthropy Fund, so that we can both work in conjunction with one another.
So there's a lot of former Ravens that have charitable endeavors here in the city. What do you think their impact has been, and what do you think the needs are? Where do you think an impact could be?
Well, I think that the platform is, first of all, a privilege. As an athlete, you have the ability to bring people together inside of your community, because they want to be attached to you. They want to be a part of what you're doing. So utilize that first and foremost to help raise funds. If it is for the cause that you have chosen within your organization, great. If it's not to, and to support another, I think that's great as well. So it goes from anything from mostly medical and cancer research to the bully issue to, like I said about Ed Reed and the field production issue, allowing the community to, just the other day we had a hardship case. They needed some bills paid for because one of their children is fighting cancer. We were able to drop money into the private operating foundation, gift directly, and paid for their bills so that they can be up for another month. So those are the things that we're doing on
making
a daily basis.
Direct impact.
Direct impact.
So, so this organization, this initiative has been around for, I think you said 2010?
Yes, sir.
And, you know, 2012, you really got going. Now you're supercharging it. How are you going to scale it and really take it to the next level?
Once you get the reputation of that we are doing great work for an individual athlete, okay, so an Ed Reed or a Ray Lewis or even myself or whomever it is, their advisory team finds that out. And then from there, they are feeding us more athletes. Are we in the trenches with some of these people? I would say yes, absolutely. The agents, the financial advisors, the legal teams, even some of the teams, the sports teams or the associations, the player associations, once they find out about you, then they see that you have a track record for a period of time and that you're managing the funds well. They are able to see the proof in the 990 because you know we have a public tax record. Then they have the ability to say, yes, this is an organization you should be attached with.
So, but it's not limited to athletes. So obviously, you know.
Thanks for asking that question.
I was going to say, you obviously know. You know, sports, and that's your forte, but CEOs are also great targets,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, because they're high profile, they have a brand they have to protect, even while they are still the CEO. Let's say they didn't sell out, they haven't transitioned away from it. They want to do good work within their community, and they have a brand they have, and they want to protect it and actually grow it so that when they are done with their whatever job they have, and they want to make it more purposeful, right, the transition to more purpose, I would say that we would be a great vehicle for them, and it creates the flexibility for them to operate under, where most other funds do not do that.
So CEOs are great targets, businesses are great targets, someone who may be selling their business.
Celebrities,
yeah.
Okay. Selling businesses. In fact, we have, we're not lawyers, but Mike, I know people that are, and that we have a great network of people that can advise if they don't have that. We have people that can set up the nonprofit corporations or charitable lead trusts or whatever it is. We have the ability to assist with that, including athletes, CEOs, high profile. We have celebrities in there as well, movie stars. And then we have accounts that have no connection with that. They just know us and they need the help and the assistance and the flexibility to be able to do what they want.
So speaking about business and CEOs, you seem to have some entrepreneurial spirit. In fact, I know you do because I know you were talking at lunch, you saw a couple of businesses involved in a couple of endeavors. Where do you think you got the entrepreneurial spirit from?
You know, being a kicker in the NFL, because I'm not just a kicker, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
Being a kicker in the NFL, you are very segregated in the role that you have, very much like a sniper in the Army. Are you in the trenches every day? No. But you're on top of the roof, right? You're in the outskirts and extremely vital for the overall well-being of your team. Back in 2000, you know, I kicked helped kick the Ravens into the Super Bowl 35 and we actually won. So what I saw was that back in high school, you know, I ran my own lawn service, I raked leaves, I babysat, I did anything I could not to have to work for an hourly wage, right? I wanted to work for myself and create my own environment for that. And I noticed that every time that I worked for an hour, I was getting paid $20, $25 an hour, right? Compared to the $5 an hour that some other people were. So I saw that, and then I also understood that in order to do that, you had to work very hard and you're totally accountable.
Yeah.
That spirit then transitioned into my playing career because I understood that there's 10,000 high schools in our country. I was a player who was an excellent wide receiver, but there were other people out there that were better. And in return to that, if there's one in my high school and there's 10,000, what chance did I have? And so I learned how to kick. And so there's another entrepreneurial, you know, I focused, I got hyper-focused on what my role could be. I found a niche and I attacked. And I believe in what Gladwell says in Outliers, the book, that 10,000 hour, and if you have the talent, yeah. you can be a master of it.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I did.
So you're very strategic even in your playing career. That's very, very interesting. Yeah. I don't know that many people are that strategic.
You have to be.
Right? I don't see it. So, you know, I think there's a lot of commonality between business and sports. You know, the teamwork, pulling in the same direction. I see a lot of analogies between, and I can see that you've applied your sports career to your business career. So as your career was winding down in football, you obviously moved on to other things. Business being seems like your passion. How'd you start to prepare for the next chapter?
Year one, I started absolutely preparing for my career after football. Why? Because in the NFL, it's considered not for long, right? The old Jerry Glanville statement, right?
That's true.
I knew that if I wasn't going to be able to make it, you know, for 5, 6, 8 years, you know, it'd be still just a good start in life. Yeah. My first salary was $78,000. Not bad in 1990,
bad.
Right?
Right.
And then I started doubling, I started tripling, and I started making some more money, and I actually made it 20 years in the NFL. But when you look back at year one, I knew that if I created a network of relationships, that if I wasn't able to continue kicking because of what, I don't know, an injury or just poor performance, I had relationships out there in the marketplace that I could go rely on. So I wanted to be in the sports management business at that time. So I began to intern for International Manager Group, which was in downtown Cleveland, where I was in school, where I actually wasn't in school, but I actually played for the Browns 1991 through 1995. For three of those 5 years I was there, I interned with IMG, right? I developed enough relationships because really when you looked at business, it comes down to relationships. Do you have the talent and can they trust you? Those three things in my mind were something I needed to develop, and that's how I was really modeled myself while I was playing, that I had the talent, right? Then could I manage those relationships? Because I had a bunch of head coaches during the course of my time, and special teams coaches, and snappers and holders. Did I manage those relationships well enough so that therefore I was trusted, even when I did mess up? Because we all mess up.
Yep.
And then was I able to manage that well and then create a long-term career?
So you circled yourself with centers of influence. People, men and women that were experts in their field, and you started as an intern. Interesting.
Yeah, and the reason was because you should be transitioning out of the NFL the first year you're there, because it's going to happen sooner than you want it to be most of the time as an NFL athlete.
It's funny you say that, because we say that about business owners too.
It's going to happen.
The day you start your business, you should start thinking about how you're going to exit, right?
Exit strategy,
it's
man.
It's going to happen.
Exit strategy.
You're going out one way or another. So at lunch, we had talk, and I didn't know that you were one of the owners of creditcards.com.
Yeah.
You care to comment on the
dynamic
there?
A lot of people don't know that.
Well,
you know, in 2003, a good friend of mine began a business called creditcardapplicationcenter.com. You went on the internet, you applied for a credit card. Every time that you got an approved credit card from that bank, they would pay us a fee. He needed some help. I came alongside of him. 3 years later, we went in and bought the creditcards.com domain name for $2.75 million.
Wow.
Why? It's because we knew we had the niche absolutely cornered based on Google and our sales compared to anybody else in the industry. So we developed it under a subordinated name. We needed to get the top name in order to actually execute well. Offensive to be defensive at the long term. We grew it into a $40 million business from there and sold it for $144 million.
That's a great success story. But I got to tell you, talk about taking a risk. You paid $2.7 million for a name. Now, it turned out okay, right?
It turned out
okay.
I still own the domain name. My friend just kind of borrowed it from me, basically. Okay. He paid me a royalty. I was paid off in less than 15 months on my investment, and then the next thing you know, we were up and running, and we sold it 3 years later.
So I know you got some other good things going on. Care to comment on some of your other entrepreneurial initiatives?
Well, with regard to the Players Philanthropy Fund, that was a purposeful, driven decision to do. I have great partners with Seth McDonald, who runs Raverly Management, and he and I are partners with Emil Colina, who was an estate attorney, who the three of us developed it. So again, relationships. Eleanor Shriver McGee, who is my executive director, I bring their names up because I have to have those relationships to support the cause. We all do, right? And then with regard to any other, I'm a part of a health care initiative called Kermit. We're in the University of Maryland Medical Systems right now. We've got our product. It's a SaaS model in certain areas, and it's a cost savings model in others, where we're able to actually go in there and help hospitals save millions of dollars on orthopedic, spinal, and cardiovascular type of devices.
Wow. So you've done a lot in your career. Where do you see yourself in 10, 15 years, other than perhaps snowboarding? Because I understand you may be snowboarding.
Well, I do love to ski. In fact, I do that every year. In fact, my last 2 years of my career, I was actually doing it, and I ran into Brian Billick on the slopes, and he went, dude, what are you doing here?
I bet.
No, but I, my wife and I love Montana. My daughter, who my oldest daughter, she's 22.
Okay.
I have a 21-year-old son.
Wow.
They may be married at the time, having kids.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and also giving back. I do find that the Players Philanthropy Fund is something I continue to want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Assist athletes, celebrities, and high-profile individuals to continue to be, to give more responsibly.
Okay.
And then, of course, I love to public speak. Mm. I do a lot of public speaking and like to play golf. So let's go out and have some fun doing that too.
Awesome, awesome. So take a step back. I'm curious. We talked a little bit about Puerto Rico and your and the ability to set your fund has the flexibility to get up and running quickly. Understanding you guys made an impact in Puerto Rico and with that disaster. Care to comment for a second?
We're starting to make an impact there. There was a solar energy company that was overhearing an interview that I was having on the Wharton Business Channel on XM. And they were considering creating their own private 501c3.
Okay.
After they heard that there was another option for them to create a nonprofit entity, they immediately gave us a call and says, we would love to set up a fund. How do we do this? Because I told him, this could be set up in 24, 48 hours,
That's
depending
amazing.
On how you do it. And he says, absolutely want to do it. And now their job was to go out and raise those dollars in the nonprofit sense so that their company can be then assisting people in portable solar power units. So if you have a small refrigerator and you have an insulin need and you had to keep your insulin cool, right? They didn't have any electricity to keep it cool, and many people have been dying down there because they didn't have a refrigerator.
So basic.
So they had the initiative to go out and do that under the nonprofit label because they believe that they can do that, and so far we've been doing a very good job in executing well for them.
But you give them the platform, and you're able to get up and make an impact quickly.
I'm
a corporate lawyer. I've set up foundations and charities,
and
you're lucky if you get 24 months.
Right.
Not 24 hours.
And that's if you can get it set up sooner than that, but you better be the guy that's always working with the IRS and you have them on speed dial and they know you.
Yeah. Yes.
And then you can get it pushed up to the top and get it done in 6 months. But even then, there's so much more to it than that. All the documents and the operating and who's going to be running it. And then the W-2s. And,
it's a business. The red tape and the process,
It's a lot. So what we try to do is we try to streamline it so that they get up and running immediately and start giving where they need to give.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. So you had a 20-year career in NFL, a very storied career, but a lot of athletes in the NFL, they get, 3 to 5 years? I don't know what the average is, but maybe somewhere in that realm. Do you speak to some of the current players and do you try to give them some mentorship?
Absolutely. In fact, if you think about the averages in the NFL and the longevity, if you make a 10, you win. That's the answer.
Is that
so
right?
If you get 10 years in the league, and then if you get $10 million of workable cash, right?
Okay.
So if you get the burn rates off of 10, that's pretty good, right? So if you're a first-round draft pick, your average is 9. Second-round draft pick, your average is 7 years in the league. Third-round draft pick, it's 5 years in the league. So when you look at the longevity, it's really not there. So what you do try to tell them, and which I've been hired by the NFL as an ambassador to actually go speak to high school collegiate athletes and the NFL athletes, not often, but because Troy Vincent was the guy that was utilizing my abilities, is to be able to speak to them in a way that, look, this is just a quick start in life. It is not a means to an end. If you end up with a 10 and a 10, okay, then you can reconsider, okay, I'm good. I can, burn to 3-4% a year annually on that 10 million and be pretty good as long as you don't have any debt. But as you look at what happens to a lot of the athletes and the averages, it doesn't happen that way. And the number one cause for their 78% of us going broke within the 2 years outside of the NFL, why is the statistic there? It's because culturally, most of us have never had any money.
Mm.
And we don't understand that $100,000 is a lot of money, but at the end of the day, it's really not.
Because if you think about it, if you get 10 years in the league, right, and maybe you come out at 21, 31, pretty young man.
31. That's a long
life. A lot more
life,
right?
The average is not 72. It's the same as everybody else's.
Right.
And let's say you live another 40 years. That's a long time for that money to last. So what you have to do is make sure that you stay married.
Yeah.
Because the number one reason for guys going broke is divorce. Second one is child support.
Oh,
third is bad business decisions, right?
Mm.
And then fourth is not having a budget. You got to know what you're burning every month.
You're right.
And you got to know what you're going to be spending. And I've also sat down many of players and just said, let's go over your budget. Let's see what you're spending. I know what I'm spending. Let me show you. And I would show them, and they'd go, wow, you spent a lot of money.
Right?
You know,
keep it simple.
Yeah, but you just have to, you know, understand that when you step away, how much money do you need to be making to replace your current lifestyle based on what you have? And they don't understand
that
principle.
It's funny you said it. So analogous to business owners, because, you know, business owners, same thing. When they want to step away, how much money do you need in your next life? And what perks you get in the business that you run through the business you don't realize you have? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of analogies.
It's very similar. We're all our own little entrepreneurial and entities in the NFL. We have our own corporation. We need to surround ourselves with good people, your legal team, your financial team, all those type of things.
That's a great mentality. I mean, athletes are obviously athletes on the field, but like you said, they're each their own little business. Mm-hmm. They got their own entrepreneurial story, and if they look at it that way, they can have the great success that you've had continue to have.
Mike, and there's some great stories out there of guys that actually sought that counsel and have done tremendously well.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You've got a great story, and I'm sure there's more to come.
Oh, that's cool. Appreciate Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah.
This has been CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, Attorneys at Law, your perfect legal partner. For more information and to tell your entrepreneurial story, visit us on the web at ceominutes.com.